All right, so we're here just outside Barcelona, and a couple of rat bags have come over from Australia. They're en route to Germany to challenge and, I suppose, try to destroy the G8. First of all, could you tell us what a rat bag is, and and tell us what you're here to do?
Rat bag is a term for Australia, just for...
Well, it's a derogatory term that we just kind of started calling ourselves.
Appropriate derogatory term for a rat bag, for an activist, I guess. But it kind of has humorous aspects to the term as well. I mean, traditional rat bag action will be both serious and disruptive, but have a solid sense of humour. Yeah.
Okay.
It's important.
So is there a couple of activists coming from Australia to try to disrupt the G8 or to end it?
Yeah, I'm a bit wavy.
Well, I mean, obviously to end it, I mean, I think all of us would pretty much be opposed to the institution of G8. Obviously that's not going to happen at a summit protest. And so I guess for us, we're all probably participating in direct actions and stuff on the day, but because we're coming from Australia, it's more kind of networking, getting to know people, a learning experience rather than primarily a thing about participating in the direct actions, even though we obviously will, and that'll be an important part of it. Yeah, because, you know, coming from Australia, it's so far, and, you know, learning experience will be, I guess, pretty important.
Mm. So do you see it then that the, because you're travelling so far to Europe, does it seem that, first of all, it's so far to travel, that there's so few of you coming over, that it's, you won't have that much of an impact? Or is it more the wider aspect of, like, to actually to challenge the G8 and the capitalist system of this world at the moment, that, okay, to go and to show that there is resistance to the G8 is one thing, but also that, you know, that maybe the solutions are building the alternatives in your own backyard.
I think really you see, you know, with these movements after Genoa in 2001, that, you know, there really does need to be... Well, you had a series of protests that were summit protests, big protests at you know, corporate meetings. But it does beg the question, well, how do we actually change things in our everyday lives, in our lives, in our communities, from where we come from? And I think, yeah, really for us, that's the point that we... You know, and when I said before, learning experience, it really is to try and take something back to Australia and network internationally.
And in turn, when you say take stuff back to Australia, like the things you see visiting
in terms of learning things that we can actually then use and you know,
inspiration.
Well, yeah, coming back with a sense of being part of a social movement that's much bigger than the world that we see around us immediately, you know, and a sense of being a part of those social movements definitely. I'm hoping that it will instill me with a heightened sense of confidence in my own politics and a sense that we're not alone in these kind of ideas and in these kind of struggles.
And is it, like in Australia, do people feel there that they are very much away from the rest of the movement of the social...
Yeah.
Well, it's a very sort of isolated place,
it's a big
in a way.
Yeah.
I think people, there is a real sense of, Australia being... very far from everywhere else. In a lot of ways, you know, not just physically.
Yeah.
But politically as well.
Even in terms of the closest country being New Zealand, in terms of communication between the two, it's not that much. There's a few people came across last year for the G20, but in terms of us being able to communicate and organise with people across other borders, it's comparatively minimal compared to what that people can actually do in Europe.
Yeah,
I think part of the strange dynamic that's arisen in Australian social movements that so much of our politics is actually based on European politics. You know, like, so, like, the kind of theorists that we read, the kind of actions we draw inspiration from, the kind of history of politics comes from Europe because we're a colonial nation. You know, like, we share language with Britain. You know, like, our political forms are European political forms, our cultural forms are European cultural forms, and so much of our actions are based upon these kind of European models, yet there's so much locally that is actually quite different to Europe. Yeah. And so that has also had a massive impact on Australian activism as well. So at once, while often we think about doing some mobilisations and we use theorists like, you know, in Antonio Negri or Alan Terrain or these kind of European social movement theorists, yet the kind of things that we'll be doing will often be quite different. Like, for example, the environment movement in Australia is huge and has been really influential in understanding social movement activity. Forest blockades, anti-uranium, mining, what are the other big green issues, dams, these kind of things that are really big and really quite locally specific,
yeah,
and often have quite a strong relationship with, or increasingly have a strong relationship with Indigenous resistance and Indigenous struggles in Australia. And those things we really struggle to think about with much strength because there's not much of a sense of local confidence in those politics. So you don't get much of a sense of people thinking and writing and taking those politics locally really seriously, but much more a tendency for people to read European social theorists and go, oh, this is how we understand what we're doing because this is what someone in Italy is saying about their society, which is really, really important, obviously, to take that knowledge. But I think what is lacking, you know, to come to revolutionary situations, are going to be very locally specific, you know, like, the G8 being in Germany, I think, is really the biggest advantage to German social movements. You know, like, in Germany, they are going to be able to have an opportunity to mobilise, have an opportunity to build networks, to form some sort of resistance. That's what's important for them. In Australia, you know, when we have similar events there, it's great for us because we can generate our social movements there. But so I think what I feel needs to be done in Australia is for there to be a sense of confidence around our own politics and around our own specific dynamics. And the dynamic is really different, like being on stolen land in Australia, like that has a really big impact on autonomous social movements in terms of going, you know, because, you know, here, there's a squatting movement, you're able to say, this is ours, you know, we want to reappropriate land, this is our resources that the ruling class has stolen for us through the period of industrialisation, and we're taking it back. Whereas in Australia,
it's part of the colonialist project,
one colonialist taking it off another colonialist, then, like, how do you, and so that's part of the reason why there's less confidence as well, you know, like, the sense of ownership isn't as great.
But I don't think that it's historically, I think also in Australia we've been more than 10 years now of neoliberalism, and Australia, like England and the States, is probably about, seems about 10 or 15 years ahead in neoliberalism than, say, Europe. Europe, you still have healthcare, education, utilities, electricity, water, etc., which are in some way public or owned by the government. Australia,
electricity and water,
not anymore. Okay. Well, these are all privatised in Australia about 15 years ago, and so it's a kind of strange thing where, like Shane said, politically, a lot of people look to Europe and Australia for political inspiration, but in some way, in terms of neoliberalism, Australia is like this kind of weird neoliberal experiment over the other side of the world. And so I think that's part of the, in some way, a lot of the lack of confidence is 10 years of a government that is both neoliberal, but also, like, extremely kind of racist and, you know, xenophobic. So I think that's kind of the context is people, for us, we're like, how is it that, you know, people who, you know, it's kind of a weird dynamic in Australia. You have, you know, the biggest mobilisations against the government about around the war, except then young people vote the government back in again.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of the, you know, for us, that's our context. So we come to G8 trying to look for, you know, also learning ways that we can actually break that context in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, getting back to, and I think that really impacts Australian politics. You know, 10 years of neoliberalism, 10 years of, you know, declining wages, casualisation. Yeah.
Increasing surveillance as well. It's a huge term of paranoia in activist circles.
But it should be the
kitchen.
At the end.
So, Well, if we can take it then, going back to Germany, like there's people coming from Australia to Germany, there's people from other parts of the planet coming to Germany. I'm wondering about the effectiveness of the mechanism of people coming to the one specific point to engage in action, to show resistance, to try to possibly break or challenge or build or turn us around the present existing system. But I wonder how effective it is, everybody coming to the one space. Is there other alternatives that we could be looking at, exploring, that are being tested maybe already, that could start to build maybe a better system?
Well, this is the question, yeah. It's like,
go big or go small?
Obviously, we're past the crest of that movement towards big centralised actions at summits, mobilisations, and so obviously the confidence in that being a true revolutionary, well not a true, in that confidence in that being an effective revolutionary strategy is obviously declining, yet there's still interest in doing it. But I guess like what I was saying before, I feel like perhaps in Germany, having a big protest at a summit is probably a really valuable thing for them to do for their own social movements, because you can actually have this resistance rising out of a real social context and generated from a real, from communities. Resistance can arise in Germany in quite a locally specific way, and that the experience of mobilisation is often a really powerful one. You know, like you meet lots of people, create these temporary collective spaces where people are actually able to form relationships that aren't based around capital and atomised.
But the thing I'm wondering, like for example, rather than what normally happens today, like which is happening, Germany will have its few days of resistance against the G8. I'm wondering, in one specific area, I'm wondering whether there could not be a global action of resistance to the G8 in, like, where globally we all act locally in our own local spaces of commerce or wherever to say, we aren't happy with the way the world is going now, and we actually organised locally. So those experiences that you're talking about, which Germany will definitely experience, could not be experienced by a wider community in their more local groups by actions, but also if there was maybe more methods of communication opened up by with the new streaming technologies that are here, are just report backs from each other's experiences in a more real way than happens at the moment. Because I think at the moment it happens that people go and they do their thing and they have their experiences and that's it. There's not, I think there could be a wider dialogue happening.
So you're asking like what the next step is, beyond this. Yeah, I mean, I think obviously that would be, the ideal situation, but, I guess that there's an opportunity to demonstrate in Germany at the G8. And really that opportunity has been generated out of a social movement. Like a social movement has generated the possibility of there being mobilisations at summits. Like, and I don't completely understand how that process has occurred, but over the last 15 years there's been enough of legitimacy generated from within social movements around doing that kind of protest that means now actually it's relatively easy to mobilise people around it. There's a summit happening, you put the word out, and boom, there's your action. Build a castle, people come. Castle. But
I think that might be a rat bag gag there, I'm not sure.
To have this a situation like you're describing, where actually all over the world you have these some sort of coordinated actions that are based around the principles of anti-capitalism and in rejection of the way that states organise themselves at the moment around neoliberal policies, like that is a possibility that we have to actually generate. And at the moment that possibility doesn't exist. So it's not the case that if you're in Melbourne right now, or I presume Barcelona, you go, the G8's happening in Germany, let's do action here, and everyone will just come, like that legitimacy, that sense of momentum hasn't been generated by social movements. And so I think definitely that would be possible, and certainly a desirable situation, but that's something that we actually have to generate.
I'm just wondering now, taking it outside the first world to the wider world, which are definitely feeling the more starker effects of this the neoliberal agenda at the moment. Like, you look at Africa, you look at you look at what's going on, what's been going on for a long time, the exploitation with the results of countless millions of deaths, like 7 million people dying needlessly at the moment. Doesn't have to be that way, but it is because of this world order that maintain the system through trade rules, through whatever, to keep things the way they are for profit. But I'm wondering about the connection between the first world and the wider world. What kind of networks of communication there are, of flows of people, of real understanding of communication, like here in Barcelona and Catalonia. There's lots of migration from places from Africa through Morocco into Spain. There's connections with Latin America where other things are happening. Like there's a strong world that's standing up to the world order in Latin America. So I'm just wondering about that. Just your views on that, the connection between the first and the wider world.
It's a very general question.
Like for example, in Australia, you were saying that like there's a lot of people coming from the Middle East and they're travelling overland. They're trying to come in on boats into Australia. The government blew 400 people out of the water a few years ago. There are flows of people. There's communication channels being opened up.
Mm. Most of those total third world conditions in Australia as well. Like there's extreme poverty, and I think Aboriginal men have one of the lowest lifespans of
in the world
at the moment, even within Australia, like I suppose that issue between first world privilege around politically organising and the context of that, it's something that can. It can be quite difficult in terms of organising in Australia.
Well, just on that, like in terms of like you are three white guys coming over from Australia. Like in the social movements, is it all young white guys, or is there lots of Aborigines? Is the Aborigine part of the social movements?
Yeah, look, I mean, all the same relationships that are wrought by class and race are present in social movements, like have flowed into social movements. And so those kind of relationships of class and race and things that social movements grapple with, but and gender as well, and sexuality, your wheel of misfortune. that's definitely an ongoing question. It's something that we're far from resolving in social movements. I mean, your typical stuff you'll see. The typical relationship you see in broader society is definitely transferred into social movements in terms of largely white young men.
Women men are in Melbourne, it's probably more women organising than men.
Yeah, more women organising than men, yet there's still a situation where men will often have disproportionate power within the social movement, and very few Indigenous people involved in social movements, white social movements. Like there's very definite Indigenous social movements occurring, but they're often quite separate, and these attempts at trying to make them integrate, but we're far from coming to a situation where that process is ideal.
Mm.
But I mean, in terms of what you were saying before about relationships with the third world movement, I think that there's nodes of power, like nodes of capital power around the world that enforces a particular neoliberal order on third world countries, and in Asia Pacific, Australia is definitely one of those nodes of power. So if you think about the way that the relationship that the US has to Latin America, the US state has to Latin America, is very similar to the relationship the Australian state has to the Pacific and to Southeast Asia. Less so Southeast Asia, but the Pacific. And so, at the moment, there is, in all the Pacific nations surrounding Australia, there's this massive, intense neoliberal push to privatise land, to allow foreign investment, to cut public expenditure, all these things. It's huge and it's absolutely destroying these societies in this powerful way, really crumbling under the force of this neoliberal assault. And
the Australian security
and Australian security, in five or six Pacific nations, there's Australian police and Australian military and Australian judges. And the Australian state is actually a presence in the in these countries to enforce an illegal order. So I think that for us, in terms of that question, I mean, of how to deal with the way that the international capital is affecting third world nations or whatever, I mean, I think that a localised kind of movement against that trend is what is going to be most effective, because it's very hard in Australia to be talking about what's happening in Africa because it's so far, and the relationship of the Australian state and Australian capital to African neoliberalism is actually quite distant in some ways. I mean, obviously it's part of the same system, but the relevance is, like, it's a bit of an abstract jump, whereas the relationship between Australian capital and the Pacific, for example, is much more relevant, and there has been a history in Australia of successful solidarity actions between Pacific nations and Australian social movements. And these are the beginnings of that starting to occur in Australian social movements now, but it's only just starting to kick off. But people beginning to become much more interested in what's happening in these Pacific nations and trying to form relationships with activists there and social movements there, and trying to, you know, to become part of some sort of, you know, transnational, like, you know, localised movement against the Pacific capital.
An interesting thing about that is that the APEC, Asia-Pacific Economic, is happening in Sydney this year. And so I think one of the things that was realised coming out of the G20 last year was that...
The G20 was...
Could you just explain exactly what was that? What exactly happened?
So the G20 was started by the G8, and it's, instead of being the average countries, it's...
G8 plus 12.
It's plus 12, and so...
Plus the next 12, or the local...
There's some tokenistic poor countries, India, Brazil, and then I think Spain was the... should have been there, but they put Saudi Arabia in instead. And then Paul Wolfowitz from the World Bank came, and so it's the treasurers from all those countries came to Melbourne and had a forum. They all got, I think it was Essendon. I mean, I get killed if I get that wrong. Essendon jerseys off our federal treasurer, Peter Costello. They've got a thing called the Accord for Sustainable Growth, which is basically, it's well worth reading if you go on the G20 website. It's all about privatisation and corporatisation.
So this is their sustained economic growth, which completely fucks us up sustainably.
It's just amazing. That's just the way they've slapped down the discourse, and Colfeder was like, sustainable. It's actually quite cynical.
But they came to Melbourne to have a... Melbourne conference last year sometime.
Yeah. Effectively, the G20 is just a response to social movements by the G8. So the G8 has come under massive amounts of pressure over the last 10 years from social movements all over the world, particularly in places like Brazil and Africa. You know, there's been a lot of pressure. And so they have created this new body, the G20, which is like a tokenistic, you know, inclusionary of the poor of the world, kind of, but it's just a total wank job.
It's also a way for the G8 to go, this is what we're going to, like, this is what we're doing, this is what you guys should be doing, kind of thing. Like, it's a way to, for them to push their agenda in another forum that's considered democratic.
But it happened in Melbourne.
It happened in Melbourne in November last year.
Okay.
And there was a mobilisation in Melbourne against the G20. And there's a history of those. There's a history of some mobilisations in Australia, beginning with S11 in 2000.
And then
WTO in Sydney in 2001.
2002.
Anyway, there's been a few. Most successful was in 2000 in Melbourne, where there was a World Economic Forum at the casino in Melbourne, and there was a mass...
bit apt.
Yeah, totally. And there was a mass grassroots direct action mobilisation that was huge and pivotal in Australia. Like, that is kind of the moment that social movements reference in Australia now. It was like, how many people were blockading? 50,000. Like, it was massive.
Right.
And massively successful, and, you know, most people, in social movements, everyone references that day. But anyway, the G20...
Unions as well.
Yeah, and then all the unions and the civil society. I mean, it was kind of, because at that time, that movement was cresting, you know, it was between Seattle and Geneva and all that was going on. But the G20, I mean, G-Man was organising before me, so you should talk about it.
It was complicated and interesting in a lot of ways. Like the main organising collective, they didn't work out whether they're actually a collective or like the organising network body. And the action in some ways ended up being a bit of a mess. At the same time, there was a tighter collective that organised a squatted conference in the week beforehand called the Space Outside, that saw about 300 or 400 people through in the time and held a range of workshops. The basic premise underlying it was like, why are we organising around the summit? What does it mean to be an activist? Or like, should we even call ourselves activists? And so those kind of questions. We were kind of putting ourselves through the ringer in a lot of ways. Yeah. And then there was like all the different campaigns that were happening came and gave discussions. And
yeah, it's really interesting. The questions you were asking before around with the local or global, you know, like what is the most effective strategy for resistance and around stuff like that? They were the same questions that we were asking at this conference. Yeah. That was the premise of having it. Was like there wasn't actually much of a sense in Melbourne that there was a massive momentum towards having a summit mobilisation. Yeah. The G20, like it wasn't a massive issue. Like there's, well, of the social movements that were occurring in Melbourne at that time are still occurring now, people would seem to be more interested in following their own campaign.
Okay.
And then the G20 was happening, and so it's like, you know, the question that a lot of people were asking is like, why was S11 in 2000 such a big event, and why
September 11th, nearly S11?
Yeah, no. Call the protest in Melbourne at the casino happened on September 11th, 2000.
Okay, okay.
So in Australia, these two.
Right. Good to clear that up.
When S11 happened in Melbourne.
Ironically enough, September 11th is the Catalonian day that they celebrate Catalonian.
Really?
Because that was the day that they were beaten by the French.
Wow.
So another
remember S11. The Chilean S11 when
Allende.
So anyway, the questions that we're asking is like, why was there this sense 5 years ago, 6 years ago, of there being some sort of potential for a big collective anti-capitalist mobilisation that doesn't seem to be so present now? Like people seem to be a bit more fractured, or there's less desire to be involved in that kind of action, yet the social movements do seem to be still continuing. These are the questions that the conference was.
So it was really like a reflection on the years back, saying, okay, there seemed to be so much an explosion of something. What did that turn into? Did it really change things?
Yeah.
What are we have?
Well, yeah. How are we organising?
Okay.
Even the conference was actually criticised on Melbourne Indie Media for not being a part of the community enough as well. Like,
so in terms of where it was physically, locally,
but we were considered a clique.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, like an elite clique of white middle class.
Okay.
That were organizing this,
you know, anarchists, blah blah blah, and that didn't actually have the relevance to a local community, that were borrowing politics from elsewhere, that it actually was. I guess the argument is kind of that you're biting yourself on the foot, you know, biting yourself on the ass by holding a conference like this that's trying to generate a mass movement, because you're organising in such a way that prevents it from being a mass movement.
Right.
Like that's kind of critiques, which obviously is a very big conversation in and of itself. But that was one of the questions that we were trying to explore, like all these things. And it was interesting because of this particular mobilisation, the relationship of the conference to the actual demo at the G20 wasn't a clear one, you know, because like we're having this in some ways quite traditional summit mobilisation, but the conference that immediately preceded it and was designed to try and create a bit of momentum for it, questioning the ability of even doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
And then what happened in terms of, like, you had the week of discussions, the internal critique, etc. Was there days of action against the G20 then after that?
There's still 2 days of action.
Yeah. Okay, and how did they go? Or
fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Well, the first day of action was
Corporate Engagement Day.
Yeah, which is dubbed Corporate Engagement Day, which is the worst name for a day of action I've ever heard.
I thought it was kind of funny.
Anyway, it's good to not be able to take yourself too seriously.
Exactly, yeah.
So it was called, basically it was...
That seems to be part of the rat bag philosophy, being able to laugh at yourself.
Yeah, true that. The idea was that on that day there was a decentralised targeting of corporations, and so part of the idea of Corporate Engagement Day is to create a situation where different social movements could do relevant actions to their campaign that were somehow collective and tied to an anti-capitalist demonstration. So the forests movement, which is in Australia, or particularly in Victoria, or everywhere in Australia really, but really significant because the old growth forest is very important, very valuable and disappearing very quickly. So they went and targeted the government and corporations that are logging. People that were involved in
Lake Cowal,
which is a bit of land in New South Wales where these uranium mining,
gold mining
about to begin. They went and targeted their corporation, and then a different group of people that had been organising around the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and militarism went and targeted some corporations that were involved in militarism in different forms. And it actually turned out to be very successful because a lot of the stuff happened everywhere. It was all decentralised and was actually quite effective and shitloads of fun. So, like...
What would be interesting to say is there was two or three groups that were quite public, the Trendy Cops and the Radical Cheerleaders. So just
the
Trendy Cops, which is a...
Trendy.
Trendy.
Oh, Trendy.
It's like a play on tram cops, but
tram cops being
or train cops, so like trendy. Which is like a
police sort of trendy.
But they're specifically for public transport. So they dressed up in uniforms and like just around the city.
Dressed up in police uniforms, but they made their own police patches that used the police logo, except with an anarchy symbol on it.
Okay.
It looked almost exactly the same. It was fucking gold.
Yeah, they're amazing. And then there were
all women with painted on massive mustaches.
Big boots, big belts.
Totally gold. So, often when the idea, it was really, really effective and fucking so, so very funny. Like when the cops would rock up to do a baton charge, all these ladies dressed up in their tranny cops would come up and in front of the cops and actually tough and be marching with the police and then just spontaneously break out in booty dancing.
And then there was Radical Cheerleaders as well, which is a group of men and women that dressed up in with garbage bag pom-poms and stuff like that, and they were quite public, and so they went around and the cops tailed them all day, and everyone doing the decentralised occupations of offices, and pretty much I think it was only the Lake Cowal group that
had because it,
well they fucking occupied for an hour or something or 2 hours, but everyone else was in and out really quickly before the police were able to get there. So it was an effective model for doing those kind of occupations.
Mostly what we did was go to corporate offices, barge in, create some chaos for a while and then leave. Just as an act of disruption, mostly. So that's what most of the actions were based around.
Okay. Would it be banner drops or blocking or?
Yeah, various different things depending where we were. I don't know so much about the other groups because I was involved in the anti-war actions just because of stuff that I've done before. But what we did was there was about 50 people that were involved in that block to go into anti-war stuff, and the idea was that we'll try and disrupt as many ANZ branches as possible. ANZ is a bank in Australia that is involved in the Iraq Trade Bank, which is the bank that's bankrolling all the investment in Iraq, so really involved in the occupation or whatever. So we were going to go and try and disrupt the activities of ANZ branches, and there's heaps in the city, 20 or 30 branches in the city of Melbourne. So what we did was we split into about 5 different affinity groups, and then we made a map of all the different ANZ branches in Melbourne, and then we chose 3 per affinity group. And the idea was that we'd go into the bank, which was the actual public branches mostly, where people go to put their money in or whatever, create chaos, stick little toy soldiers everywhere, that kind of stuff, hand out leaflets about what ANZ does to the people, and then leave again and go to the next one before the police have an opportunity to arrive and kick the shit out of us. And it was fucking gold. It was so, so good. It was just chaos.
They shut down all banks.
Yeah. After about 2 hours of running in, throwing shit around, having a good time, we couldn't get into the ex-banks because all the banks were closed, saying ANZ is closed due to G20 protesters, and for all the next day as well. So they effectively had to close down all of their street-level branches for 2 days because of all the...
Which hits them in their pockets.
Yeah, totally. And as a publicity thing, it's terrible for them as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was totally sensational. I mean, it was so much fun because you'd be like coming out of a bank and going to the next one, you'd see like three cop cars whizzing that way, and they'd just go straight past you heading somewhere else. And then because we didn't know where the other affinity groups were, you'd be walking this way to a bank and then three cop cars would like whiz in another direction.
Yeah.
And there'd be cops going everywhere. They had no fucking idea what was going on. And we were just having a glorious, glorious time. So that was the Friday anyway. And
the corporate
engagement day.
I said a few minutes, I don't know what you said yesterday.
Anyway.
And so then the second day?
And so the second day, the idea was to be much more of a kind of
mobilisation
and mass mobilisation to go to the fence, because in Australia, like everywhere else, every time
they... So they actually had, like, they'd blockaded themselves in, yep. Preparing for...
Was it the Grand Hyatt, which is a big hotel in the city on Collins Street, and they blocked off the block all around it.
Okay,
the whole city block, yeah.
And
this is like with just fences or with riot cops, with guns, with
guns. Barricades. Batons. I mean, they actually, it's kind of complicated, so maybe I shouldn't go into it, but I mean, their way of setting up the blockades
is this in a purely financial zone in the city, or is there people living in that zone?
No people living.
It's the business district.
There are some high-rise.
Some houses, but not really.
But they're high...
Or yuppies, yeah. People that, yeah. Largely it's commercial. So, yeah, I mean,
so it's like, it'd be like the same sort of mechanisms of blocking a part of the city as happened in Genoa, where they put like a blockade everywhere, but the difference being that in Genoa it was where people lived, it was in their homes, and they were, their freedom of movement was totally blocked out in their ways of... Whereas here it's just business and
So you know, largely the same model as everywhere, just perhaps on a different scale. And so the policing tactics is kind of a big complicated story that we probably shouldn't go into, but it's kind of very locally specific. But basically, yeah, barricades everywhere, and there was kind of two main groupings. There was one grouping was the people who were going to do direct action, and the other grouping was people who were just going to do a rally and march and have speakers and these kind of things. And it's interesting because the people that were going to do direct action were very organised and coherent, and the people largely, and the people that were going to the rally tended not to be. So the rally was far more open, you know, you see lots more individuals and people who weren't engaged in the lead up to it that just sort of rock up on the day to come.
And with these, like, with the main marches and talks, are they like mostly say socialist groups or trade union groups? Do they request the permission for the march? Do they explain where they're going to be, where they're going to end up, their times, or, you know, is it all very controlled and not much of an inconvenience for the authorities?
There's an organising group called Stop G20, and they were the ones that were organising the main rally, and that comprised of
trots,
socialist groups, a few other groups, and like mostly uni students, the Latin American Solidarity Network, people from Friends of the Earth, like that kind of stuff. And within that group, there was heaps of really frustrating debates around whether there should be liaising with the cops, negotiations with the cops for a passage of the march and that kind of stuff. And we tried as best we could actually shut down those kind of negotiations, because that closed off the potentiality to do a wider range of things, and it basically leans to the legitimacy of certain groups and other groups around
the good guys and the bad guys.
Yeah, good protests, bad protests, and they were really, really difficult, really ongoing, frustrating discussions.
And some of the discussions that were happening in the week, the week that months. Previous, or this is in months?
Yeah, it's kind of different groupings. Like the group that organised the space up, the conference in the squad, that was sort of very much the direct action people, and there was very little crossover between the direct action people and the other people. So like those discussions, not really different forums largely.
And so the Stop G20 group, it organised the main route that people would walk down, it organised speakers for the point of mobilisation, it organised bands. There was an idea to have a carnival atmosphere. And so they called it a carnival against capitalism.
Okay.
And they had band trucks that kind of stuff, and
at the fence outside, without any attempt to try to push through. It was just to get to the fence to say we are against this, and we advocate alternatives, basically.
And the thing was, it was difficult. There was a few music stations that were set up, and so the crowd was quite dispersed, and then it was quite difficult, I guess, negotiated between people that wanted to march and people that wanted to do direct action. And there's been all these debates around or questions around safety.
The direct action group, though, which is quite separate to that mobilisation, the main rally was on the second day, was to start at 12 o'clock at a particular part in the city. And then, so the direct action group, which was largely the arterial block, as you can see demonstrated on G's t-shirt over here. G's just wearing a t-shirt of the arterial block.
They all were in court yesterday.
Because everyone got arrested. In the morning, the arterial block, which was the direct action crew, met in a particular place and then decided to have...
Was this just one of the many blocks that were taking direct action?
No, the arterial block was made up, was quite a loose block, really, that was made up of just about everyone who was doing direct action.
No, that was the one that block, and
they were part of the arterial block, though. Anyway.
Okay. No, I'm just wondering, is there many of these different blocks around the city? Was this the main block that engaged in that?
I just think it's worth saying there was other people that were doing direct action as well as the arterial block and the wombat block. Like, it wasn't just the arterial block.
That's true. There was other people, but I feel like the largely the organised part of it was the arterial block.
Right.
And the arterial block wasn't organised over a long time before the G20. It was largely brought together in that week in the conference immediately before.
Could you just explain, like, arterial, like, what does it mean, or where did it come from?
But the idea is, like, you know, you have arterials of arterials, the term we use, the freeways, like the arterial in Australia, and so you have these arterials that cross over through cities, and like the main avenues.
Similar to arteries of a heart.
The body. The main avenues of the city go through these arterials. The idea was that the arterial block was for all the different arteries to intersect and
to block the city.
Like, a lot, like, the first call out was all about enacting politics, it being a reclaiming of bodies, and being this celebration and this articulation that's had a physical presence, and it's like something that comes from the heart, like from your body. And it's one of the things you can read heaps of shit.
That's more on the wanky end of the rat bag scale.
Anyway, the day of action, the arterial block
mobilised to approach the fence in the morning and have an attempt to breach it, and approach the barricades and attempt to breach it. And there wasn't much thought. I wasn't much confident, actually, in the morning that people would be able to breach the barricades. I mean, there was a feeling that there was fucking heaps of cops, the battalion of the pricks there, and you know, we were relatively few, and there was quite a bit of fear around police repression and these kind of things, but we decided we'd have a crack, as you do, and so we went down to the fence, and I think no one, the police, the politicians, us, no one expected we'd be as successful as we were. It caught us completely by surprise. So I'd have a crack, and so we'd get there, and we'd come to the first barricade, and there wasn't actually any police on that particular barricade.
Was this a fence up, or was it all locked together, concrete?
Those barricades that they have, like, at the soccer area, the full water, the big plastic barricades that you fill full of water. And then they had...
Like the tough plastic?
Yeah. And then they have what they called sheep pens in front of them, which was a series of steel cages in front of the barricade.
Like in squares?
Yeah.
So maybe a 3 metre square surrounded by fencing.
So if you jump in, blah, blah, blah. But when we got to the first barricade, there was very few police there at that time. I'm not sure they expected us to come so early, so you just ran straight up to it and smashed it to pieces. And then everyone kind of looked at each other and went, now what the fuck do we do? So we went to the next one.
How many people were there at that stage?
250, 300?
Okay, so quite a
250,000 people. Yeah, yeah, substantial. Everyone then got very excited and went to the next barricade and did it again.
This is further down the line or further in?
Yeah, coming closer to the hotel.
Getting closer, yeah, like going in and in and in.
There was layers of barricades, of sort of barricades that blocked off streets in the outer.
Yeah.
And then as you come closer to the hotel, there was the immediate barricades in the actual hotel. So we got through the first layer and we're running into the second one. And we got to the second one and there was many more police behind that.
Right.
So we attacked the sheep pens there, the steel cages, at the second layer and got them out of the road, and then that's when the police came out in force. And so after we got the second row of barricades out of the road, all the police started pouring in to reinforce.
They came from inside out towards you?
Yeah, or just to reinforce the actual barricade. They didn't cross.
But they weren't coming from side streets to attack you? Or
no, I don't think they were actually prepared for us to do what we did. We weren't prepared for us to do what we did.
Okay. And this happened relatively quickly?
Yeah, within the space of an hour.
Okay.
Here. And this was all by sort of 10:30 in the morning. So
before
the main rally even started. And then at that point we did a few funny actions where we would like run, we would charge lines of police and then fall over laughing at the last minute, like these kind of things. Fun. And then there was a sense like the police presence was building up and there was only 250 of us surrounded by barricades and a battalion of cops, and everyone started to feel quite unsafe. So we decided to withdraw back to the main rally and then approach the fence again in the afternoon. So we left at that point. And at that point the police did start pursuing us down the road. So as we left the Hyatt, left the space of where the actual conference was to head up to the rally, a lot of police followed us down and people were running away from the cops to get up to the rally. Got to the main rally, the main march, the Stop G20 march, and then we're there for an hour or two listening to speeches, and then we came back down to the conference again.
Okay.
And that is when all hell broke loose. So then again the arterial block and the people were interested, and now the arterial block at this point then picked up lots of other people that wanted to be involved in direct action that weren't organised beforehand. And so as
did they fully know what you were about, or did they just go, oh, these guys look like they're doing something interesting, or just following to see what was going to happen?
But lots of heaps of young, I think what Duncan over here would call young lads, lots of the young lads. They were out for a stoush, just like, you know, lots of young skater boys and, you know, young punks and shit that wouldn't have been involved, that saw the arterial block kind of have a crack and were like, fuck, I'll be in that, and came down. But we then attempted to breach the barricades again, and it was at this point in the afternoon that it started to get a bit messy. So there was an attempt to pull, so we breached the barricades, and this time we got
this in a different place now.
Different place. We got rid of this is the inner barricade though. We pulled down the sheep pen, then we pulled down the water barricade as well, so there's then physically no barricades between us and the conference. And that's when shitloads of cops poured out, and the riot police came out with their shields and helmets and all this kind of stuff. So then there was a bit of a stoosh between us and the Jacks, and people started
in English now. A stoosh between us and the Jacks.
There was a bit of a conflict broke out between the protesters and the police.
It wasn't necessarily just a discussion.
Was their heads being cracked by the cops?
The police were remarkably restrained, and the reason why at this point they were, the reason why is the result of a complicated history of
protests.
But it's an exception that the police were relatively restrained.
Right.
Yeah, usually that they would beat the shit out of people, but they didn't for sort of complicated reasons. But people started throwing barricades and sort of
stones
and dumpsters and these kind of things at the cops, which is something that very, very rarely happens in Australia. It's not a part of our activist culture in the way that I think it is in Europe. And so that was sort of, and then it kind of started to get a little bit less organised. People started to get frustrated after a while
because
the attempts to break through the police lines were failing. And so people moved around to a different barricade to try and breach that. But it was all starting to fall apart. The organisation was starting to fall apart by this point. It started to get a bit crazy. And, you know, there was a big police truck, which then big police truck that was barricading a side street, and everyone ran up to that and smashed it to pieces. And the smashed up police truck then became the media symbol for repression afterwards, so that's why I sort of mention it. And then that was
okay. I see. So, well, that's, we've heard a pretty in-depth
blow-by-blow account
of the actions and mechanisms used in Australia to confront the systems of power and control of this world at the moment. And now
crack at the pricks.
And now these are some of the Aussie rat bags are en route to Germany. So we'll see what happens. So well, I suppose. Well, thanks for those reflections, and it's nice to hear that people are coming to try to change, to give things a chance of changing things here, and the mechanisms that you're using and stuff like that. So we'll wrap up. So thanks very much, and we'll see what can happen.
Yeah.
Bye.